Everybody, this is Sarah Benincasa, and this is Well, This Isn't Normal, a podcast about dealing with all of this, dealing with strange behavior, dealing with strange interactions, dealing with anxiety. And, you know, I think this is actually a pretty joyful podcast, despite the fact that we launched March 16th. And my cat is laying down right by me, executive producer Polly, being very adorable right now. I wish you could all check her out. You can go to @WellThisIsn'tNormal on Instagram and follow us and say hi there. You can support the podcast, patreon.com/SarahBenincasa. And I'm @SarahJBenincasa on Twitter and on Instagram. I talked to Jessica Ellis weeks ago. I mean, it was late March, I think, actually. And she started a podcast called Distant Socials, which is about dealing with what I have come to call Corona. And my hope is that this podcast that we are on right now will provide you with a toolkit for how to deal with anxiety, and you can carry that forward. Or it'll just entertain you. You just hear some weird lady in California talking to some interesting people. And Jessica Ellis is certainly an interesting person. She made a film called What Lies West, and she is super smart. She's a babe, too. I mean, whatever. I'll objectify her. It's fine. She's been cutting her own hair. It looks real good. And so she's a creative person doing creative things, and it was really great to talk to her many weeks ago. Feels like 1,000 years ago, but I think this is still a relevant chat. So I hope you enjoy, and I'll be back to chat with you a little bit more once the interview is done. Hey, Well, This Isn't Normal audience. I'm hanging out with Ms. Jessica Ellis, who is a filmmaker and also a podcast host of a show that I call Distant Soch, which is actually called Distant Socials, which I got to be on, I guess a week or so before recording this interview. So thank you so much for joining us, Jess. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun with you on Distant Socials. I'm really excited to come here too. This is just like a moving party.
I know it is. It's like, I got a podcast, you got a podcast, let's talk for our podcast and learn more things. That's the theme song of my life.
I like that.
Oh my goodness. Well, we are recording on Sunday, April 5th, to put it in context for people. And gosh, I mean, how are you doing right now? I had nightmares last night. I have nightmares sometimes now, and very much anxiety related. And so I woke up repeatedly. How about you?
I'm not having nightmares so much as I'm having very stressful dreams. Like, they're not like, oh my God, a demon is after me, but they're just like, I need to get somewhere and I can't get there, or I need to leave someplace and I can't find a door to get out. Like, they're not actively scary, but they're just frustrating and stressful. So yeah, not sleeping much either. But I'm being so inactive, it's probably okay. It's balancing out.
That might be part of it. Maybe it's the fact, oh God, of course it's part of it. Now that you said it, I'm like, wait, that makes sense. I haven't been very physically active. And so that's absolutely part of it. And, you know, I do not have a thigh gap naturally, and I probably never will.
Nor I.
But I mean, you know what? Like, we're lucky enough to, fortunate enough to have good food and to have thick thighs or plump thighs. Like, God bless us. We're very lucky. But one thing that I have noticed is that the other day I woke up and I was like, my thighs hurt. They, for a few days in a row, my inner thighs were clearly chafed. And finally, it was so bad that they started to peel. And I was deeply confused because even regardless of the weight that I've been at, I've never had a thigh gap. But I have had times where I, you know, you're walking around a lot, especially when I lived in New York, and I was at a higher weight. So my thighs were bigger. I was carrying weight there. And so sometimes they chafe. So I would use cream or whatever. And I couldn't figure it out. And I realized years ago, I believe it was my college boyfriend, one of my college boyfriends, but my main college boyfriend, told me that when I am stressed, I
cycle my legs in bed like I'm riding a bicycle.
Oh my God. Isn't that crazy?
And it was sometimes I would kick him by accident. It was this very, I was like, oh my God. And so I realized, oh, I've been doing that in my sleep. And I did it so much that I rubbed them almost, not raw, but almost. They were peeling and I had to apply. Oh. I have tea tree antiseptic therapy cream. So it doesn't, it stings a tiny bit because it's antiseptic, but it's mostly very soothing. So isn't that weird?
That's crazy. I have definitely gotten the thigh rub before, like summertime going around in shorts. It is so painful. But that's interesting, you know, and this is not in any way meant as an insult. My dog does that in his sleep. He runs.
Oh, that's a compliment. I love dogs. Yeah. That's a huge compliment.
He goes on whole gallops in his sleep, and he's done it more as he's gotten older and less active during the day because he's got hip problems, so he doesn't really go on runs or anything anymore. But when he sleeps, he will go for a little jog. And I don't know, maybe the body is just determined to get some cardio no matter what.
Yeah, maybe that's, I've been so absolutely like, oh God, I've been so absolutely in, you know, physically inactive that my body is like, fuck it. I'm taking this into my own hands. We're going for a bike ride. We're doing the Tour de France in your
sleep. You don't have to be awake. You can sleep right through it. I'm going.
Isn't that an interesting signal from the body that we can, it's a signal and I can read it in their different ways to read it, right? I'm wondering what kinds of signals your body has been giving you at this time that have felt unusual to you.
I am going into, or I have been cycling through a stress pattern that I recognize from other traumatic times in my life, just where I can't concentrate very well on things. I have a really hard time sitting through movies. I have a hard time reading stuff that's not really familiar to me. And this has happened before. The few times in my life I've had severe stress or grief or something like that, I just kind of, my whole brain takes nap time for a while. I think while it's kind of processing it and my body stays very slow and quiet for a few weeks. And it's like when your computer freezes for a while because it's thinking about stuff and then it's like, all right, now I'm ready to go. So I trust at this point that my body is just, we're processing. And I'm going to be a little.
Your body is a wonderland.
I'm going to be a little slow and stupid until it is done.
Well, that brain fog that can arise in times of stress is very much present. It doesn't just have to be when we, you know, have experienced death or there is a lot of grieving and the loss of a relationship, and it doesn't just have to happen then. It doesn't just have to happen after the loss of a job, which also is very, can inspire a lot of grief, even when one didn't like the job. So it's not always those events which are more common, vastly more common than a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like every human being throughout history has experienced, except for those whose lives were unfortunately cut very short, themselves, but as children or infants, nearly every human being, I will say, has experienced the death of someone or something they love, and so has experienced grief. Many human beings have experienced the loss of income, whatever that meant in their particular cultural context and time period. And you know, the numbers are big, right? Global pandemics have happened before. The bubonic plague,
sure.
What we call the Spanish flu, which I always emphasize didn't start in Spain and was not created by the Spanish.
Kansas, right? The Kansas flu.
Yeah, like possibly the Kansas flu is what we should be calling it. We don't really know. But those vast sweeping things are far more rare than the more common experience of losing a loved one, losing a job, being broken up with, finding out somebody's cheating on you, your pet dying, a beloved animal dying. Like that stuff is so much more common. And that can make things foggy and confusing.
Absolutely.
So of course, this is weird. Like, of course, this time is strange. Do you ever stress eat?
I do. Yeah. Stress eating is a very common coping method for me, actually, and always has been. I grew up relatively poor, but the one thing, my mom was definitely like a feeder, and the one thing we always had was food. Like that was the core thing that my family could be counted on to have. And just definitely like kind of eating your problems was encouraged. And I keep it fairly under control. Like I don't beat myself up for being like, I'm feeling stressed right now, and what will help me is a handful of chips. But like, I try to avoid an entire bag of chips. So
yeah, you know. Moderation is what we all, you know, I think so many of us are striving for. And there's a point at which the healing oneself or self-soothing with food becomes dangerous. But there's a point there, but there's a lot of room before that where food is nurturing, it's comforting, it's love, it connects us to a memory. I was very sad the other day and thought maybe I would make some of the Lipton like powdered soup that my grandmother used to make for me when she was basically nurturing me with like very depression era stuff, you know, like,
yep.
or I suppose, 40s and 50s as convenience foods became more of a thing, especially the 50s and 60s, that I have a positive association with. And that actually puts me in mind of this. So obviously that soup is not good for me, but yum, it's so high in sodium and I love it.
Yeah.
but sometimes things that were, you know, things that are not great for us can feel comforting, and that can be dangerous, like acting out with drugs or alcohol, if we have problems with drugs or alcohol and things like that. And I'm wondering, what are some ways in which, not presuming you have any issues of that nature, but I'm wondering, what are some ways in which you do like healthy checking in or healthy self-care or, you know, kind of taking the temperature of where you're at, not literally necessarily, although sometimes, but emotionally, like what are some ways in which you talk to yourself at this time?
Something I've worked a lot on in therapy is developing what my therapist called a nurturing inner voice, you know, that can mm-hmm. be sort of your guide and your self-reliance. And it's something that was very trapped in me for a long time because I just had a lot of negative messaging about myself, about feeling helpless. But as I've worked on this, what has been useful is to remember that most coping tools are toxic in excess. Like, you know, everything is toxic in excess. Drinking water is very important to staying alive, but you can drink so much water that you kill yourself. So trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know somebody who had to go to the hospital.
It's scary.
They drank so much water.
I have pretty severe health anxiety. And that's one of those ones that like, if it's ever super hot and I like down, you know, like up 2 glasses of water, I'm like, oh God, have I given myself water toxicity? But it's one of like 50 things. But for back to self-care, I think the key is not being brutal with yourself for wanting coping mechanisms, be they watching an old favorite TV series, be they a glass of wine, like, but to be very in contact with yourself emotionally about what is an aid and what is a crutch. Mm. And that to me, I don't tend to have a whole lot of problems with excess, but it is important to know, anyone, I think, where your limit of I'm doing this because it's helping me relax and cope and get, you know, good relaxed hormones going in my body, and that's helping me deal with it, or I'm doing it so much so I can avoid dealing with it. And honestly, that's just a practice that comes over time, I think. That's not like a magic thing that you can determine. You just, as you get older, you do the work on yourself, hopefully, and you figure out where those levels are.
And it's different. It's so different for everybody that wouldn't it be great if we could just figure out an assembly line solution for anxiety, for depression, for all these different things that we experience, the human condition in general, as well as the sort of specific illness states or disease states or difficulties that one experiences. Like, wouldn't it be great if we could just pop into a factory and be like, okay, that, That's what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah. It would be fantastic. It also would be amazing if therapy was like a thing, like you have, you know, an infection where you get a prescription and then you're fixed after you're done. And I think a lot of people mistakenly go into it being like, okay, they're going to fix me. And it's like, nope. Like everything else, all psychological issues are a question of management, not cure.
Mm-hmm. And that's all right. Like once I readjusted to the notion that, okay, panic attacks are probably always going to be a part of my life. But I can lessen their impact and I can learn how to deal with that. I can acquire the tools that I need to deal with that. It got a lot better. And the amount of times that I experienced them certainly went down because I wasn't anxious about being anxious.
Right. And that can be so much the scary part with anxiety. I have a generalized anxiety disorder and the issue of like, I don't want to worry about being worried. Like I want to plan this fun event. I don't want to be panicked that I'm going to have a panic attack on it and that it'll ruin it. And then you start spiraling. It's tricky. It's a horse you have to learn how to ride.
And I like that. That's a very good way of putting it. Well, can you tell me about your most recent film project?
My film, I made a feature that's been in festivals and right now is not because everything is shut down, called What Lies West. It's a coming of age adventure story about two girls who are kind of forced together for a summer and start taking more and more adventurous hikes, finally with a goal to hike across Northern California to the ocean. And it's very much about, it's in the vein of kind of a Stand By Me or a Now and Then, but a very kind of personal female story about capability and anxiety. It's strongly about anxiety disorders and generational anxiety and how you learn healthy habits to manage it and recognize it and cope with it.
Now, is this your debut?
It is.
Nice. Very exciting stuff. And I'm assuming, had you done shorts before or like what sort of has been your path in filmmaking as an art form?
My background is entirely as a screenwriter. So I had not directed before, but I had written shorts. I went to the American Film Institute, so I wrote shorts in college.
Oh, cool. So you went to AFI.
I did, yeah. And since then, have just been writing everything I can since that. But finally, I got to the point where it was like I had graduated. I think when I started this, we'd graduated 6 years earlier. And I was like, all right, got to actually do something. If I want to prove that I can really do this, I have to do something. And so I got one of my rare bursts of extreme energy and just pushed everyone I knew into getting this project made. It was an explosion of energy that has taken a couple years to recover from.
And isn't that how it so often happens in the film world? It's very rare that somebody, especially a woman, just gets handed a directorial project that's fully funded. Like that very rarely happens. What more often happens is that people have to spend a ton of their own money and go into deep credit card debt on shorts, even if they've raised the money through Kickstarter, through Seed and Spark, etc. And they probably are going to make multiple shorts before they get their first deal, or they're going to self-fund their own. That's why, I mean, it sucks that these indie movie festivals are canceled. I mean, that's how has that affected you as an indie director at the moment?
It's kind of a nightmare, honestly. We had done a couple festivals. We were very excited to be going to the Vail Festival, which was supposed to be at the end of March, but unfortunately got canceled. Where it has really messed us up is we're trying to prepare the film to go to distributors. And the key thing we still need to do to that is get our music clearance rights, because you have to go to the distributors with that already done. And none of the music companies are doing music clearance right now. So we literally can't take the film forward until things reopen and get it out finally to like streaming and get a release for it, because we can't get rights to anything. So at the moment, we're kind of at a bit of a standstill. I think Vail Film Festival is transforming into an online festival that will happen sometime in May. So hopefully people can see the movie. They can get like an online ticket and watch it there, which will be cool. But yeah, we're all a little frozen at the moment. And that's a little scary because we've been working on this movie a while. We would like to sell it.
And that was the experience of our past guest, one of our early guests, director Ingrid Haas, who is a Canadian-American writer-director and who did her directorial debut, a short called Still Wild, and it had gotten into South by Southwest, and she was so thrilled and excited. And then, that didn't happen. South by Southwest did a deal with MailChimp, I think, to make the shorts at least available online, or some of them, if people opted in for that. And that was great. And it's really great that these different film festivals are finding different ways to make it available. But for folks listening, go ahead and watch. You know, watch shorts online, obviously features as well. But it's really cool if you're somebody who goes on Vimeo, which is Vimeo.com, you can look at their Short of the Week program, which is great. They highlight some really interesting stuff. Future guest Chelsea Devantes was a Short of the Week recently with a short film called Basic, which had gotten into South by Southwest for the Comedy Shorts program. And so that was a really big deal. And so, you know, there are a lot of people like Jessica, like Chelsea, like Ingrid, a lot of different people who have made wonderful work that I think deserves to be seen. And some of these places are making it possible for you to see it. And if you're somebody who's interested in filmmaking, check out South by Southwest online. Check out the Sundance Institute, Sundance Labs. My friend Liz Nord helps run Sundance Labs. They do a lot of at-home distance education, and they have for quite a bit of time for people who are just interested in learning about filmmaking and about writing. And Jessica, I should ask you, I'm not a director. What are some ways in which people who are interested in learning about directing can learn right now? You know, I know you have to learn on the job, but learn by doing, but certainly there must be some books that you really like or some master classes like that.
I think there are pretty good master classes. I mean, there's just there's a wealth of information out there that you can find through YouTube, through Vimeo, through various services that don't try not to pay for too much because, take that with a grain of salt. Yeah, the key for directing, I think, is learning it by doing it and just talk to Twitter is an incredible resource for independent filmmakers. It is the film community on there is vibrant and love talking and love sharings. And it's very easy to get into that, follow filmmakers you like, follow new independent filmmakers and become a part of that community. You will find we funded our movie almost entirely through my Twitter connections. You will find so much life in that community that's so much more accessible than the kind of impenetrable wall of studio Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and check out, follow Franklin Leonard online. Look at the Blacklist.
Yes, Franklin Leonard is a great resource.
Franklin's amazing. And look at the ways in which the Blacklist has changed accessibility for people, to get their work seen, which is pretty awesome. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for your time. Please tell me and the people where they can find you on social media and, other stuff out there that you may have on the internets right now that you would like people to see.
Some of it is probably illegal. You can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Baddest Mama Jamma. You can find my podcast at Distant Socials. And you can find my movie at What Lies West. It's all very literal.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time. What are you going to do for the rest of this Sunday afternoon?
I am considering, Sarah, making a tiramisu cake.
Oh, honey, get wild. You're speaking to some of my DNA here. I love it.
I had mascarpone come out of quarantine today, and I'm looking at it and considering.
Oh, that's so exciting. You should totally go for it. What a joy. Now I always have to ask, because I don't drink. So I'll be like, is there rum in that? And I know that, it's not the point. It's not that one is going to get drunk off of rum in one's tiramisu. The point is that taste can be triggering for somebody like myself who's an alcoholic. So that's why I have to check in and ask, and people get confused. And then I'm just like, listen, whatever. But a lot of the times it doesn't have rum. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. Most of the time you're just dealing with delicious espresso soaked goodness. And what a delight. What a pure delight.
This one can have rum in it, but it definitely has espresso. And that's the important part.
The espresso is so vital. Oh, how I love it. Thank you, Italy, for a lot of things. definitely espresso. Shout out to Italians. We do have some Italian listeners, which is nice. And a shout out to espresso. Jessica, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that was my interview with Jessica Ellis. Jessica's great. She's really talented. I can't wait to see her feature and just to get to know her better as a person and as an artist. Oh, these are funny days, aren't they? There's definitely ups and downs and not necessarily violent mood swings, I think, for most of us. For some of you, that may be part of your experience. And if so, I really encourage you to reach out and get help from a therapist. You can check out the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org. And of course, if any of you are ever in an emergency situation, mental health-wise or otherwise, please call 911. But for most of us, the moods seem to go up and down in a given day. Not necessarily I'm feeling great one moment and shitty the next, but how I'm feeling at 8 a.m. may be different from how I feel at 6 p.m. And that's true any day. It really is. And in normal times, that can be true. But this is a strange thing, and we are all living through a collective trauma. And I think it's important to talk about that. I started this podcast, I think, 7 weeks ago. There was a week off in the middle as I transitioned to working with Jonathan Villalobos, who is awesome, who is the engineer and editor, schmeditor to the stars. At least for, I'm not a star, but some of the stars on this podcast. And he's based down in Dallas, so shout out to Jonathan. But so I've been doing this podcast for the duration. I think I started like sheltering at home maybe March 13th or 14th. And the first episode, I think, came out March 16th. So this really has been a recording of this time. A record of this time, in a way, at least through my experience and that of some folks I know. And it's wearing on a lot of us. It really is. I did a socially distant Comic-Con last week, which was amazing. I interviewed 36 people going from 7:45 a.m. to 8:45 p.m. on Instagram Live. And my friend Cecil Castellucci interviewed, I think, like 15 people. And we jumped into each other's interviews to ask questions, and she set up a bookshop on bookshop.org for us, and it was just really cool to advertise for our friends and people we believe in, and to bring some folks together, and also to shout out some great organizations. BINC, B-I-N-C, which is a book industry nonprofit helping booksellers, indie booksellers being super hard hit right now, of course. And then also CBLDF, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. So it was great to be of service and to do that. And man, it was amazing and exhausting and special, and reminded me of how I miss people. So if you can, if you are able, it does help to go for a walk by yourself with your mask on. If you are crowded by people right now, whether that's one person or many people, it also helps to go on a socially distant walk with a friend. I did that with my friend Molly McGlynn today, which was lovely. She is a filmmaker, and I want to interview her and have her on this podcast. And she's just such a neat person. So I'm very, very happy to have her in my life. But it was great to go on a socially distant walk with masks on. That was helpful. I know I've gone all over the place a bit in this outro, but I am thinking of you. And I do appreciate you so much. I know that Mother's Day is coming up, by the way. So if you want to get your mom something rad, go to matrushka.com. That's M-A-T-R-U-S-H-K-A, matrushka.com/code/Sarah, S-A-R-A. That's matrushka.com/code/Sarah for 20% off plus free shipping. They got shirts, they got dresses, they got all kinds of stuff made right here in Los Angeles. And you know what? It doesn't have to be for Mother's Day. It can be for a high school graduation, a college graduation. It could be for yourself. Treat yourself. It's made here. There's a tiny group of people, mostly women, working with Laura Howe, who's the designer. Christine Flick is great. She fulfills your orders. There are some people sewing. Raina is fantastic. She's the master seamstress. Leslie is great. She's the master pattern maker. There's some other folks who are helping out. And I obviously am a brand affiliate and really enjoy working with Matryoshka. So you can feel good about your order because it's folks working here, right here in the US of A, in a small business that, you know, did 80% of its business in the brick and mortar store in the Sunset Junction section of Silver Lake for 12 years. The business itself, I think, is 15 years old, but they've been in the same spot for 12 years. They're getting priced out. So they were looking at a move anyway. And then boom, this happened. And suddenly that little shop is now a workshop. So matryoshka.com/code/SARA. Order something pretty, 20% off free shipping. Also, you can support this podcast, patreon.com/SarahBenincasa. I'm going to read you something briefly, which is a quote. It is a lovely quote. And it is, you know what? No, I'm not going to. I'm not going to read that quote. I'm going to read something else. You ready? Oh, we're going to get into it. Oh, yeah. We're going to read a quote from my... I was looking at a book. I had it out in front of me. I was all ready to read you that quote. And now, we're going to do something else. We're going to do something from my beloved Molly Ivins, the late, great Molly Ivins, who was hilarious and said things like, I dearly love the state of Texas, but I consider that a harmless perversion on my part and discuss it only with consenting adults. But here is something else. She said, I believe that ignorance is the root of all evil and that no one knows the truth. She said, you can't ignore politics no matter how much you'd like to. She said, as they say around the Texas legislature, if you can't drink their whiskey, screw their women, take their money and vote against them anyway, you don't belong in office. She had a lot of wonderful things to say. She said, it is possible to read the history of this country as one long struggle to extend the liberties established in our Constitution to everyone in America. She also once said, next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be president of the United States, please pay attention. She said, what you need is sustained outrage. There's far too much unthinking respect given to authority. I would add to that that you can have righteous anger and do good things with it, but you can't wear yourself out. And she talked about that, too, in different ways. She said, I believe in practicing prudence at least once every 2 or 3 years. And she said, the thing about democracy, beloveds, is that it is not neat, orderly, or quiet. It requires a certain relish for confusion. Molly Ivins is great. That last name is Ivins. She passed away years ago, and she is my career role model. She had wonderful things to say, and she would be helping us through this pandemic in different ways, I believe. But we got us. We got each other. We got ourselves. We got our friends. There's a lot of great folks out there doing very good work, and I'm so glad to be on this adventure with you. I'm Sarah at sarahbenincasa.com if you'd like to chat. You can also message me, patreon.com/sarahbenincasa. And thank you so much to the Patreon supporters. You really make it happen, and I'm very grateful for you. All right, take good care of yourselves. I love you. I like you. I am very proud of you. As my friend Mark Bernardine said, Bernardin. I always say Bernardine. He says, no, it's Bernardin. My friend Mark Bernardin, who's a TV writer, said to me during the socially distant Comic-Con that we held on Instagram Live, I said, you know, what would you leave people with? And he said, it's not your fault. He said, I'll borrow from Robin Williams's character in Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. We are going through a collective trauma. If you can't focus, if you're having trouble, if you're angry, if you can't make your art, it's not your fault. It's okay. Give yourself a break. Forgive yourself. Now, I'm paraphrasing Mark a little bit. You know, Mark's a wonderful man and a great writer. But that's the truth of what he said. And I absolutely believe it. So Go take good care of yourselves, okay? I'll talk to you soon. And thank you for being here.